The first in what I am led to believe will be a series of convictions related to South Africa's biggest ever bank robbery, the heist of VBS. The former chief financial officer, Philip Truter, admitting his guilt and tonight spending the first of a scheduled 2,555 nights behind bars. That's 7 years. He was sentenced in the Palm Ridge Commercial Crimes Court in Johannesburg to 10 years imprisonment, but three of those 10 were suspended for 5 years. Dierwald van Rensburger, the author of a brand new book entitled VBS, A Dream Defrauded. Dierwald is an investigative journalist at the Amabungani Center for Investigative Journalism and is on the line to us from Johannesburg this evening. Just how big a deal is today's development, Dierwald?
Well, hi, Bruce. First of all, it has been expected for quite some time. This has been negotiated for roughly a year now, and it is an enormous deal. In fact, striking this plea bargain has delayed the arrests of Truter and his colleagues. I mean, that the NPA, I think, at some point gave up on it. But now that they have him in the bag, he is set to provide a sworn statement and some annexures, I'm led to believe, several thousand pages, which will detail a whole lot of new evidence against his colleagues and very likely people outside of VBS as well, including some politicians. Now,
because I mean, if there is one person who can lay out the structure of this enormous 2 billion rand fraud, it's this guy, right?
It would be, because he's kind of the technician who really just turned the screws in the background inside the software of VBS. More or less, he would take instruction and he would execute. And so he should really know where money was invented, because that is what they did. Where money was invented and to who it was then channeled, which was, you know, that was the nature of the entire scam. If anyone does know where it went, he is a pretty good candidate. But the interesting thing now is that all his co-accused are in the same court tomorrow morning at 9, having to plead, and they will now know that he has struck a plea bargain, which may, you know, it may sway their stated intention to unanimously plead not guilty and defend themselves. I mean, I'd be very interested to see what happens tomorrow morning.
The motivation for this fraud, you spell it out in your book, was the creation and the funding of the Vele investment empire. That in itself was then, I suppose, just used as a channel for money that came out of VBS.
Well, it's not that Vele was used as a channel. It was that Vele was the recipient. It was the major recipient of the money that was stolen. About half of that 2 billion figure we all talk about was used to acquire things, to put into Vele, to acquire various companies. And so Vele was what's really the point of the whole enterprise. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of conspicuous consumption, a lot of money disappeared into personal bank accounts and so on. But in terms of sheer magnitude, building this company called Vele was really the point of the whole fraud.
There was huge political opposition for the closure. Not surprising that much of that opposition came from the EFF, and you implied as much when you started speaking this evening, that this the potential tentacles of this case are going to reach very deep and very far indeed.
Sure. I mean, look, the EFF's very strident opposition to the curatorship of the bank long before there was any public knowledge about what had happened there. You know, the public line was, of course, that a black-owned bank is being singled out, or at least there's no effort being made to save a black-owned bank, which simply had fallen on hard times. That was the public narrative. Now we now know that probably wasn't true, and the motivation probably was that they knew an investigation would reveal that the EFF itself had been sponsored by VBS. The reason the EFF has become such a public part of the story, even though most of the bribery we know of or suspect went to ANC members or ANC functionaries and ANC, you know, leaders, the fact is it's only at the EFF that it's the top national leaders that are implicated in some way or the other. I mean, within the ANC, the most senior person with something to worry about is Danny Msiza in Limpopo. You know, it's not getting anywhere near Ramaphosa, for instance. But in the EFF, you have your commander-in-chief and second-in-command facing really real possible consequences, which creates this narrative that this is also very much an EFF story.
When we look at the story and we look at Philip Truter's plea bargain, how much political fallout is there going to be? I mean, has this lost its political sting, or is it still a very political story?
Well, I think the political sting is only really going to come into view now. I mean, the prosecutors have obviously and clearly concentrated their first efforts on arresting the management of the bank, people from whom testimony about what had happened inside the bank, like Truter's testimony, could be procured. It's really only armed with that you can go after the politicians, which we presume will happen fairly soon now. I'm almost certain we will see more arrests within a month or two. And I think we all can guess who those arrests will be.
It's tragic how cheaply Philip Truter gave away the bank. I mean, 7 years of his life, I think it was 5 million rand that changed hands. I mean, it really was not a very smart fraud from that respect.
I mean, the thing with Philip Truter is, I mean, it's his position is fundamentally different from the rest in that he had been working at VBS for a decade before the co-accused even showed up there. So he's an old hand there. One imagines more invested in the bank, you know, somewhat more loyal, and also, you know, more fair with how it all works, which is why he was valuable to begin with. Now, the money he was paid, I mean, he was offered 5 million, 5 million in fake money was provided to him. He managed to extract only about 2 million into his other accounts, and that's what you had to do. You had to extract the money to another bank to make it real money. If it was stuck in VBS when the bank crashed, you lost it. And he effectively got out 2 million before the thing went down. And I'm fairly certain there was an indication that he was actually surprised by the figures being circulated about what he had stolen, that he feels slighted about the scale of theft attributed to him. I mean, that doesn't help him in the least, but it is notable that the money he managed to get out is a fraction of what some of the leaders of the scam managed to get out. And I think he feels very aggrieved. And that probably has contributed to his decision to spill the beans on the rest of the gang, so to speak.
Was it a complex fraud?
Well, in principle, it was incredibly, incredibly simple. All you did was you write in numbers in the bank records to create fake money in an account. And from there, the money would flow to other accounts and to other accounts. And to other accounts. A lot of this took the form of, you know, first extending almost limitless overdrafts, and then you would basically write zero where the overdraft used to be and just eliminate it. It gets complex in that the money within the bank system gets created in one account, moves to another account, to another account, to another account, before it eventually leaves the bank. And a lot of these accounts are basically orphan accounts. They don't belong to anyone discernible. They are opened in the name of some shelf company that has no directors, doesn't even have an address. These things are all created and do nothing but a single transaction to move money from one place to the other. And so the forensic task of actually following the money to find an ultimate recipient can get pretty complicated. And it's also a problem in that a lot of money left that bank as cash, straight up over the teller cash. Which you simply cannot trace, of course. I mean, a lot of bags of money were clearly delivered to people.
But it's got fingerprints all over itself. I mean, it just feels like, from the outside, when you look at it, it doesn't look like a particularly complex strategy was simply there was a raid on the bank and money was taken out of the bank. And it's the equivalent of walking into a bank branch without a balaclava and leaving your DNA and fingerprint evidence everywhere. And that's precisely what seems to have happened at VBS. There was almost a sense that there would be no retribution against these guys ever at all. They had nothing to fear.
You get the sense if you speak to people who had been there before Sipiwa Matotsi and Andile Ramabunga and the rest of the accused show up, that there was this incredible change in culture, the sense of entitlement. And I mean, your parable is pretty good, because you had instances where, for instance, the treasurer of the bank would walk into a branch and have 5 million rand put into a bag across the counter. And the teller would, of course, be upset about this and completely confused and not at all think it's above board. But that's the order. You give 5 million rand cash over the counter to someone who puts it in a bag. This literally happened. So it is almost traditional bank robbery without a gun, because you have the authority of being management.
The astonishing story of VBS. Dierwald van Rensburg's written a fabulous new book on VBS Bank. It's called A Dream Defrauded. VBS, A Dream Defrauded. Dierwald van Rensburg is the author of that brand new book, investigative journalist at Amabungani Center for Investigative Journalism.